Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy that we all get from American politics. My name is Jonah Knight. I am from Maryland, and I'm an independent.
Hi, my name is Emily Brewer. I'm a moderate Republican from Virginia.
I'm Greg Matuszak. I'm your liberal Democrat from Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm DJ McGuire from Suffolk, Virginia, self-described economic conservative and self-confessed Republican.
I prefer to stay anonymous. No, that's a joke. This is Kevin Kelton. I'm in Southern California, and I'm a moderate Democrat.
And we are fully realized hosts of this show. And if you're interested, you can find more about us at themoreperfectunionpodcast.com. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast, where we share all kinds of weird things about politics usually. And, of course, you should rate and review us on iTunes because that just makes everybody happy. And so this week in American presidential politics, it's the gift that keeps on giving. It is the love we all feel in our heart. It is the return of Mitt Romney to center stage. He is the man who makes us all wish that it was 4 years ago, 8 years ago, and we had another choice, right? Moving forward with our lives, we've been wanting this. We've been praying for it. He's now back. And Greg, you have changed your vote, right?
Of course. I mean, Mitt Romney is not at all. I mean, I never liked Mitt Romney. How do you guys feel, the Republicans and the conservatives in the room? I mean, as a Democrat, I never cared for him. So when he comes out saying, you know, this Trump guy is a pretty evil guy, he's morally reprehensive, I'm now all of a sudden saying, well, maybe I should look into him. Well, how do you guys feel about, how do you feel about Romney like 4 years later? Do you see him stamped as a loser, or do you feel like he cost you the White House? What do you guys think?
For the benefit of those who in the listening community who have not heard this joke, I am going to say it, even though I think all of you have heard it, because I think it is deeply appropriate to Mitt Romney and the various establishment folks who are weighing in here. The joke is that a German general informs Hitler that the Italians have entered the war, at which point Hitler orders 30,000 men sent to the front. The general informs Hitler that the Italians have actually entered on his side, at which point Hitler orders 50,000 sent to the front. honestly, this is not the kind of thing that will help. Romney had not even gotten off the stage when most of the speculation in social media on the right-hand side of the spectrum was not about what a great speech Mitt Romney gave, but whether this meant that he was going to make himself the choice at a brokered convention in 2016. So, you know, I think it didn't help at all. What did help was Maine going for Ted Cruz, a state that people didn't expect. Kansas going for Ted Cruz 2-1. Same day voters in Louisiana going for Ted Cruz narrowly. Trump won that one because of the early voting. And Cruz nearly beating Trump in Kentucky. And Marco Rubio beating Trump and everybody else in Puerto Rico this afternoon.
We are so proud of little Marco. We are so proud of little Marco.
But in any event, this is really the first sign that voters, Republican voters, are looking at a Trump nomination and saying, this may not be what we're looking for after all. That, I think, had a greater impact than anything Mitt Romney said.
I'm a bit over Mitt Romney, I've got to say. I mean, you know, I look at the guy, you know, he did a service to the party, but, you know, I think that it was over the top, excessive, and frankly ridiculous that he felt like he was going to lead the banner on this and decide to speak for, you know, more establishment Republicans.
Look, there's no doubt. Mitt Romney, I remember back in December of 2014 – when everybody was saying, is Jeb going to get in? Is Mitt going to get in? Are these two big guns going to go head-to-head? And I remember people saying back then, what Mitt really wants is to be drafted by the convention. He doesn't want to run. He wants a draft Romney movement. So there's no doubt that when he took that stage or that podium the other day, He was angling to be the person that everybody turns to on the second or third ballot. It's not going to happen, but that's what was in his mind. Does anybody disagree with that?
No.
I have a friend who was a big Romney supporter, lifelong Republican, lifelong Mormon, just like admired the guy, took time off work to watch this speech, to stream this speech, and was baffled afterwards and didn't understand what the point of it was. And he said, I now don't know how I feel about this guy. I spent the last years and years really liking him as a political figure, and now I have no idea how I feel. And I think that while I was amused by a lot of what Romney said, because all of this stuff just amuses me in a weird, perverse way, I can totally see how if you're a Romney loyalist, you don't know what you're feeling right now.
Well, here's the other thing. You know, regardless of the fact that he clearly was doing this for self-interest purposes, they're probably also – I mean, I do believe he also wants to save the Republican Party as he perceives it. And I also think that Donald Trump is not his kind of human being. And I do believe that Mitt Romney is authentic about his religion and about being a gentleman and all that other stuff. So I think that he at least was trying to do some good, even though he had a self-interest in it. The people that I think really dropped the ball this week are the three other Republican or candidates for the nomination who eviscerated Trump for 2 hours in that debate. And then at the end of the debate, they stood there and said, oh, sure, I'll support him if he gets the nomination.
The exact wrong answer.
That is the exact wrong answer. These people should be coming out. If I was Ted Cruz, I would be going in front of the mics and saying, listen, a vote for Donald Trump is a vote for Hillary Clinton. If you go into a primary or caucus and you vote for Donald Trump, you might as well be pulling the lever for Hillary Clinton. He will not beat her. He will never be the president of the United States. And you will be pulling the vote. You will be pulling the lever for Hillary Clinton. That's what they should be saying.
But that's what he said.
But then he said, I'll support him for president. That undercuts the whole message. Because I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at them.
No, I understand that. But what you don't realize is that all three of them still have a path to victory, however narrow it may be.
Wait. All three of them?
All three of them do.
All three of them do.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, some of them, their path is the yellow brick road, okay? But
no, their path is actually quite reasonable, and I will tell you what they are.
Okay, but let me just finish my thought, and then you can go. They do have a path, I still think that part of that path is saying, look, I'm a loyal Republican, I love the Republican Party, and because of that, I cannot back this man. Okay, that said, DJ, it's all yours.
Okay, and that is not a wholly indefensible thing to say, Kevin. I think you have a point. However, if you have a situation where Rubio wins and Kasich loses their home states, or the reverse, Kasich wins Ohio and Rubio loses Florida, then either Kasich or Rubio finally has the moderate lane, the establishment lane, whatever the heck lane you want to call it, finally has it all to themselves. That opens up Pennsylvania, winner take all by congressional district. That opens up New Jersey, winner take all by congressional district. That opens up California, winner take all by congressional district. There are about 300 to 400 delegates, I think, in those three states. California has over 200 delegates on the Republican side, if memory serves. That's more than enough for either of these guys, particularly if they win their home state and the other one doesn't, to pull ahead of Cruz while still with Cruz having more delegates than Donald Trump does. In that scenario, either Kasich or Rubio can then say to Cruz, look, I have more delegates than you do. But between the two of us, we can stop Trump. I make you my running mate and off we go. That's the plan, and the plan could work. Now, for Mr. Cruz, his path is even easier than those two. Ironically, he has to get Cruz, both Kasich and Rubio, out on the 15th. And then he can have a one-on-one race with Donald Trump. And if the Republicans really want to stop Donald Trump, then they have, in that scenario, to simply vote for Ted Cruz. The problem is, I don't think most Republicans actually want to stop Donald Trump if the alternative is Ted Cruz.
Right.
That's a problem that Cruz faces.
Right.
But the reality is the Republican electorate can, in fact, stop Donald Trump, even at this date. The question is not can they. The question is do they want to? And we'll know that. We probably won't know that until the big states come in April, New York, Pennsylvania, and others. Because after the Ides of March primaries, the only other big state between now and April is Arizona, which is a week later. That's also winner take all. And that could end up being affected by what happens on the Ides of March. But all three guys could reasonably see themselves as the Republican nominee, still even at this late date.
See, I think – so I said well back, and I think, DJ, we talked offline about this, is that all these people are saying earlier – Kasich should drop out. Now they're saying Rubio should drop out. What I kept on saying is that why on earth would they drop out both Ohio and Florida, winner take all, we know that.
To hand him their states.
Let's just go ahead and say, here, Trump, here's your platter. Yeah. Take these, please. So that's foolish. But having said that, and I don't know if you guys would agree or disagree, but regardless of how depending on if they come in second, if Rubio and Kasich say they both come in second to Trump, I say they keep on chugging. I think they're going to keep on going forward. I think they're going to keep on splintering delegates so Trump doesn't get to his 1237, and we're going to end up with a brokered convention. What say you guys?
So what you're saying is Kasich and Rubio are there just to spoil.
If either of them lose their home state, or if both of them lose their home states, they are no longer viable. Rubio has only won two contests between now and the 15th. Kasich has not won any.
Right.
There is no, and Kasich himself has said that if he loses Ohio, he is done. Okay.
Right.
He is not viable after that. Rubio is not viable after he loses Florida. That is the reality. What made the reason I was so pessimistic last week was because I assumed that Donald Trump could have wiped out all of his competition by the Ides of March primaries. Ted Cruz has made that an impossibility now. Not only did he win four states, including Alaska, which was a real surprise because it was Sarah Palin's backyard, but he won Maine, which was also not one of his places. He nearly won in Louisiana. In fact, if it weren't for early voting, he would have won Louisiana. Ted Cruz is actually breaking out of his region. He's breaking out of his comfort zone. He's winning in places that you wouldn't expect him to win. He's undermining Trump's argument that Trump's the only one responsible for all the big turnout. Donald Trump had more voters in Maine than everyone who voted in 2012 in the Romney-Paul battle. And he was still 2,000 votes behind Ted Cruz in that state. Mm-hmm. So Cruz is going to survive, which means Donald Trump cannot clear the field by the 15th, even if he does knock out Kasich and Rubio. And here's the funny part here. Let's say Trump does knock out Kasich and Rubio on the 15th, and he gets 165 delegates. Well, that's great for Trump. But if Ted Cruz can establish himself as the remainder man, which he would, then he could win Arizona and get 58 of those back. And if he can convince Marco Rubio to endorse him, and that's a very large if, then Rubio's 110-plus delegates come over to Cruz, and he makes up everything that was lost with Florida and Ohio. And he's right back to within 100 to 150 delegates, with those winner-take-all states still out there, with the fact that in a two-person race, a number of proportional states become winner-take-all at 50% plus one. Ted Cruz would be in a very good position if Rubio and Kasich both lose. Rubio and Kasich would be in a very good position if one wins and the other loses. If they both win, then they're going to have a discussion, I think, before the New York primary on April 19. But if they both win, Donald Trump is in a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Can I also throw out something? You know, we're talking about everybody having a viable path to – and then the assumption is that they're all working for the same nomination. And I think that's also a mistaken assumption. These guys have a lot of different agendas. Marco Rubio is termed out or by voluntarily. He's not running for another term as a U.S. senator. What is this man going to do with his life? He's trying to figure out what to do next with his life, just like Chris Christie is. John Kasich, he wants a future possibly as the nominee or a vice presidential nominee. Cruz, I think that the wheels are always spinning in this guy's head about what he can get out of any given situation. So when we're thinking about what is their path towards victory, that's only one way to look at it. My sense of it is this. Unless something has radically shifted in this campaign that we're not yet seeing because we don't have a 10,000-foot view, Donald Trump is going to probably go to the convention with the most delegates. Maybe he'll be 100 short, maybe 200, maybe 300 short. But he's probably going to be the guy in the catbird seat. Now he's got three gentlemen who, if you know, if their fortunes are just good enough in the next several rounds of primaries, who each might have, or a combination of two of them, hold enough delegates to put him over the top. Well, what does Donald Trump talk about in every speech he gives? If he's nothing else in the world, what is he? A deal
racist.
Maker.
No, he's a racist deal maker.
I was so close.
And so he's got three guys who all could put him over the top or put him so close to the top that he would probably be the de facto nominee. And one of them's going to crack because they're going to go, well, if I don't give him my delegates, Ted's going to give him his or John's going to give him his. So I might as well. He's going to probably go to the guy that's got the most and says, look, Ted, give me your 325 delegates. If you don't, I'm going to John. You've got 20 minutes to make a decision.
I don't think that'll happen is because they all saw what happened when Christie cracked. They saw what happens when you stand in line and you bend and you kiss the ring and you stand behind the guy.
No, I disagree. Every one of them would take that VP spot. Every one of them, and so will Chris Christie.
I disagree.
Time will tell.
Kevin,
Lyndon Johnson. I've got two words for you, Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah, and I have two words for you. And I have a letter and two words for you, J. Danforth Quayle.
Uh huh.
Okay, that man ruined his career by taking the vice presidential nomination. He was a two-term senator from Indiana. He had a very bright future. He took the vice presidential slot, and it completely ruined his career. And you're also assuming that Donald Trump is would be able to beat Hillary Clinton, which hardly any Republican ever actually believes. And thirdly, this is your other big mistake, you're assuming there are going to be three people going to the convention. I don't think there's going to be three people going to the convention. Rubio or Kasich will not be there. I don't know which one yet.
Yeah.
But it's going to be only two that he's facing, and those two could very well just talk, particularly if it's Kasich that's knocked down and it's Rubio and Cruz. Mike Lee basically sits them down and says, okay, one of you's running for president, the other is running for vice president. Which one is it? Thank you. Let's go to the cameras. End of story.
Hold on a second. You know what? I think what we've got here, and you're not wrong, DJ, if there's three of them, quite frankly, if there's three of them, if there's four of them, it's really survivor. It's really who's going to cut a deal with who else. And it could be any combination of them. You're right. It could be, it could be Cruz, Rubio, and Kasich forming an alliance.
Nikki Haley will literally stab someone if she doesn't get that vice president position.
Oh, she ain't going to get it because it's going to be one of them.
Yeah, not this time. Not this time.
Not Nikki Haley.
No,
it's not going to be
Nikki
Haley.
Not after the Rubio endorsement, no.
See, I disagree. I don't think Rubio nor Kasich are interested in the VP slot. I think that Cruz is such an opportunist that he might consider it, or he might have such a big ego that he says, screw it.
All right. Here's a thought, though. I have a feeling that because of how embarrassing that GOP debate was, and please feel free to jump in and tell me how embarrassing that GOP debate was. I think that if given a chance, a lot of those guys will jump ship. And even if Rubio is, I may have to take a year off and go become, a filthy rich lobbyist or go work for Fox for a year. I think I'll be able to, work on that or be upgraded to RubioBot 2.0. He'll do that. Because that was an embarrassment.
And Cruz, here's the thing. Cruz is not term limited. His term is not up until 18. Right. And if Hillary Clinton is elected in 2016, and that's the way to bet, Ted is running for re-election in a very Republican state with the Democrats facing a 10-year itch headwind. Ted Cruz is fine. He'll be happy in the United States Senate if that's where he has to. He does not need the vice presidency, and he's certainly not going to take it from Donald Trump.
No, and neither will Kasich.
I don't know about Kasich.
I don't know him well enough. I don't think he would.
I don't think he would. I mean, so,
I think he wouldn't be able to handle him. I think he'd probably end up. We'd end up with the Aaron Burr situation.
So he should take it. That's what you're saying.
Maybe
other way around.
You know, a lot of people have speculated that Trump needs a woman, Megyn Kelly.
Oh. Now you're just,
I think the only place Trump lets her is the same place Monica Lewinsky is.
Ooh, ooh.
But okay. If we knew it was the woman
who made the joke,
and not any of us.
Yes, yes. We're talking to our lawyers now. hey, a little non sequitur. Did anyone watch the Democratic debate tonight?
Yes.
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 No, but I've been strangely enough arguing about it all the same.
Following it on Twitter. So what's up promo with Bernie snapping at Hillary like that?
And that's what I was going to bring about because we all jumped on you. Because I was just about to say, quiet woman.
You know, and here's the thing. I'm a Hillary person, and that line didn't bother me. I think, frankly, that the world is jumping on this man's throat for no reason at all. I think it was his turn to talk, and he said, excuse me, I'm talking.
Well,
I don't think it was a big deal. That was who didn't see it.
First he interrupted Secretary Clinton, then she interrupted him, and then it went back and forth. Right. And finally he said, excuse me, I'm talking. Except because at this point of the debate, everything was yelling. She was yelling and he was yelling. And the Bernie Sanders voice at this point, everything came out short and terse. And it was, excuse me, I'm talking. The crowd did not appreciate it.
They did not.
Twitterverse did not appreciate it. I will just say,
here's one Hillary person that's going to give Bernie a pass on it. I don't know whether I'm a loner, but I'm giving him a pass on it.
Right.
I will say based on what, and again, this is just based on what I saw from Facebook and various things and reading transcript pieces. I think what probably soured a lot of the people in the crowd on Bernie was the fact that he was defending the existence of gun manufacturers. He was attacking the Export-Import Bank.
Yes.
I spent an hour defending the guy on Facebook for the Export-Import Bank.
I know.
It was like, hey, 2016, what a year, folks. So he was, you know, this is just a reminder that Bernie is a standard issue 20th century left winger.
Yes.
Which means there are a lot of things in the 21st century that the left has made itself comfortable with, like rampant corporatism of Boeing, that he hasn't. And that was something I think maybe a lot of Democrats heard for the first time. And it may be what upset them.
Can I jump in on this Boeing thing? Because that upset me too, possibly because I'm a stockholder in Boeing. But, but you know, when he started talking about Boeing and corporate welfare, the answer that she should have given was, hey, you know what? The Boeing company employs 160,000 people in the United States, and their suppliers employ hundreds and hundreds of thousands beyond that. There's nothing wrong with corporations. There's nothing wrong with free market capitalism. Bernie, corporations are not our enemies.
Kevin, if you think the Export-Import Bank is free market capitalism, you're crazy. You are bonkers, and you need to check yourself into a mental institution right now.
You're not the first to say that.
The Export-Import Bank is a corporatist giveaway. It is putting the thumb on the scales. Delta has been complaining about it for years because their competitors get sweetheart deals on Boeing planes with export-import loans. It is corporatism of the first order. Bernie was absolutely right to beat it up and saying that, yes, Boeing is a wonderful corporation. That doesn't mean that they're entitled to sweetheart deals from Washington. That's what Bernie was trying to say. And on this one, Bernie has a point.
So most voters don't know anything about Export-Import Bank, right? It's the kind of thing that just doesn't resonate with people. But what I will say
and not in Flint, Michigan either.
Yeah. But when it came to that conversation and the big picture of it, Clinton didn't do herself any favors when she talked about, as Secretary of State, she would travel around the world and try to sell American products.
But why? And in the Democrat,
that's not a because that's not what a Secretary of State is supposed to do.
That's because that's not what that job is. And his response of, you mean this billion-dollar company couldn't afford to sell their own products? They had to send you to do it. It's like, of course he went. Like, so my view on this is different from you guys.
Yeah, well, this is why I'm the moderate Democrat here. I see it totally different.
So he completely won this whole debate from my eyes.
Okay.
Well, and I'm not a Sanders guy, and I disagree.
Not seen the debate. I can't go that far. But so I will say that he won that point.
Here's why he wins in Flint, Michigan. And there are a couple of – because he has basically this one mode that he goes back to over and over again, which is this indignant outrage kind of thing, right? It's the same – it's a similar thing that Trump's tapping into. And when you go to a natural disaster area and when the question was asked to both of them, how can you, Secretary Clinton, Senator Sanders, restore my faith in government? Do you remember the one – the lady asked the question. And do you remember Hillary's answer? I, Hillary Clinton, will triple check everything, and then you will believe in government again. And it was – and Bernie Sanders was like, that's a bunch of crap. People need to lose their jobs. And that's the answer that wins in Flint, Michigan, in a disaster zone.
Okay,
I don't know.
The only thing about that is he was in Michigan, and Hillary keeps hammering him about, you know, you were against the auto bailout. That's all these hurt. People would have – and he's like
– And that's going to hurt him because Michigan is, in fact, one of the most corporatist states in the country for that reason.
And,
it is essentially believes
saying,
it is dependent upon the big three oligopoly, and you can't win that argument. That's why Mitt Romney
exactly.
That's how Mitt Romney came back in 2012 in that state. It's why Mitt Romney won that state in 2008.
Exactly. And he kept saying well, I was against it because I didn't believe. And she said, well, that's great that you don't believe in these things, but these people are going to be out of jobs, and you may have your morals, and you may have that, but these people need this. And now the Ford is better than ever.
because Bernie is Bernie, and because he does not think in the way he does not think in a free market mentality, he could not have said, "Well, excuse me, Madam Secretary, but in the other 49 states where they could have actually had parts of an auto sector come back to life, or they could have had different competitors come to life, or they could have had lower prices for their cars that they won't have because you were insistent on propping up the big three oligopoly, they might look at the auto bailout a little different than you do." He can't say that because he doesn't think that way.
Right.
And that's why it was a Democratic debate and not a Republican debate. Had it been a Republican debate, that's what would have been said.
But that is why she won in Michigan.
I don't dispute that.
Exactly. You know, and the fact that when it came – and then she just hammered him on gun control again in Michigan. You know, so I mean it's – and you know, no matter what he says, it's five times that he voted against the Brady bill, and he still doesn't have an answer for it.
So I kind of felt like because that – the gun control thing came from a question – from the father of a girl that was shot recently, right? The Kalamazoo shooting. And his question, neither of them answered well.
Oh, no, neither of them did well.
He said, aside from what you're always talking about, which is like the mental health and the background checks, what can you really do to stop shootings? Like, give me specifics. And he phrased it differently than that. And Hillary went first, and she had no answer really. And then he went, and he had no answer really. So, and then
she said she would go after, liability for gun makers, and that's where it got interesting.
This is interesting, and I think this might be worth spending a minute on. Do you guys think
because I eagerly await us all suing the big three for every car accident that has ever occurred? You get drunk, you kill somebody behind a wheel, sue Ford, sue GM.
Someone hits you with a hammer,
you sue the hammer maker.
This is one of those things where it's a campaign promise. Whether it's going to happen or not, this is the thing that she's hammering him on. Just like he's been promising free education, and free things. This is her time to turn it around on one of his weaknesses. Now, am I saying this is the right thing to do?
So, no. No, what you're saying, Gregory, is that Democratic voters are very, very stupid, and they need people to pander and demagogue to them.
Oh, as if.
Like the Republicans. Come on.
No, they're called voters, I guess. No, it happens.
I am all for thinking out of the box on this. I think whatever solution we come to reduce gun violence and gun death in such a casual way is going to come from something like requiring insurance or massively raising the price of ammo or something just really weird that we haven't tried.
The insurance idea, by the way.
But I don't think that exactly what you said, DJ. You can't sue Ford because of a car accident. You can't sue Black and Decker because someone threw a drill at you. You know, it's not the manufacturer. It's like there's something else here. And I think that when she hits him on, we have to be able to sue the people who make the guns, she misses the fact that this is America and that's not what this country's about.
The guns were actually made to kill, and that's what they did. They promised that they were going to kill, so that's what they did.
Yeah,
everyone knew that they were going to do it. I mean, I'd be kind of mad if they didn't. You could sue them if they didn't kill, I guess. I mean, which is kind of weird. They did their job, I mean, which is a sick business that they're in, but it's legal, I guess.
Guns are an at-your-own-risk proposition.
Yeah, you know, but she's now doing a campaign promise that just can't be followed through.
It's not constitutional, I don't think it's.
I don't think it is either, but she just hammered him. And in this debate, she and once again, he had no answers.
No, he didn't. And the fact of the matter is, as much as the Democratic race is interesting to talk about, and we have talked about it a good deal and throw some jokes around and such, we know what's going to happen. It's inevitable. Unless Bernie wins a deep South state, or unless he wins what do they call it? An up South state, which is what Democrats call the Midwest, from what I remember from Clinton's campaign in 92, you know, it doesn't matter. Somebody actually came up with a regression analysis that had a perfect correlation, where it basically says if a state is more than 10% African American, Hillary Clinton is going to win. If the state is less than 2.5% African American, Bernie Sanders is going to win. Well, guess what? There are a lot more in the first category than in the second category. And more to the point, there are a lot more delegates in states with the first category than the second category, which means Hillary is the favorite. And barring her shedding her mortal coil, which I am not advocating,
or
she's going to be the nominee.
Or an FBI indictment.
Which isn't going to happen, gang.
I will believe that when I see it. I don't see an indictment coming.
It is not going to happen. Here's the thing on the indictment. As everybody already knows, it has now been disclosed that Colin Powell did the same thing, not as many times as she did, and not with the exact same server setup, but essentially he was using private email to receive documents that were later classified as confidential or classified. Apparently, the same thing is true with Condoleezza Rice and or her staff. And here's
there is an open question about whether or not Powell and Rice moved documents that were later classified upward.
Which is the only thing that Hillary Clinton has been accused of.
Well, she hasn't been charged with anything.
No, accused of. Yes.
No, she's been accused. She's been accused of a lot worse.
Well, come on. You know what I'm saying. Come on. Let's be serious here.
I am being serious.
No, yeah, let's stay on the email
she's
thing.
She's accused of much more serious spillage. Okay, this is part of my job, Kev. This is part of my job.
There is no such thing as much more serious spillage. If it's illegal to do it once, it's illegal to do it 1,000 times. If it's legal to do it once, it's legal to do it 60,000 times. There's no quantitative reasoning in the law.
Spillage is not – this is not necessarily an issue of legal violation. You don't arrest anybody who commits spillage. You have to fix the spillage, and it's a whole bunch of problems, and security can be damaged. But we don't cart off to jail everybody who commits
so
the spillage.
So she won't get indicted.
I agree with you.
Okay.
But it is going to be a political issue. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, if she made a mistake, and if the processes were not clear-cut enough, then they may write some new, you know, regulations. They may even pass some new laws. But let's not, you know, feed the fire that our listeners are already feeling on social media and in the stuff that they read, that so, she did something that is going to knock her out of the presidential race.
Well,
it's just
not true. No. I completely agree. This will not stop her from getting nominated. And if Trump is her opponent, this won't stop her from getting elected either.
Here's how this matters. Here's why this is a potentially a big deal in the general. And it's because of Republicans like Emily and DJ, who are in swing states. No. Here's the question. If Donald Trump is the nominee and if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, if you are a Republican, a clear-headed Republican in a swing state who can't stand the idea of Trump being the president – and you can't stomach the idea of a quote unquote criminal like Hillary Clinton, who's gotten away with it again, instead of voting for Hillary Clinton, there are a good number of Republicans who will say they're the same and I'm not voting or I'm going to vote outside of that structure.
Right.
And
I would
say about Hillary Clinton's thing is that this is feeding into the image of moderate to centrist-ish right Republicans who really have a hard time saying Trump is going to kill this country and Hillary's no better. And that is the position, that is the aura that she has in some of these purple states.
I'm not getting what you're saying, Jonah. Let me attempt to make it for him
because he's addressing us. For one, I do not know if I would classify Hillary Clinton as a criminal, but I do think that both Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Trump would do very serious damage to the country if they were in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Thankfully, I do not have to vote for either of them. And furthermore, if I decide to vote for the Libertarian Party nominee, whoever that is, the fact that the Democrats will be so furious that I am not voting for Hillary Clinton because they can't stand Donald Trump, and that the Republicans will be just as furious at me because I'm not voting for Donald Trump to stop Hillary Clinton, will make me stand by the Libertarians all the more, because nothing will please me more than to hear a bunch of Trump partisans and Clinton partisans insist that I have to vote for their candidate to stop the other one, and I can look at them and say, no, I don't have to like either of you, and I don't. Goodbye.
I'm going to be insisting in a couple months.
I'm going to go ahead and say it, and, you know, being in the party, you know, everyone's going to ask, are you going to support the nominee? Of course I'll support the nominee, because I don't feel like still – and maybe I'm living in La La Land. I don't think Trump is going to be the nominee. I think an unfortunate turn of events may happen that may derail him. But I'm with DJ. You know, if Trump's our nominee, I'm not leaving the party. The party left me.
All right. I'm going to start referring to you, Emily, as Lemony Snicket.
Okay.
From here on out.
If Trump is the nominee, it's not our party anymore.
So if,
however, I think Trump's nomination was less likely today than it was 48 hours ago.
Okay. That's fair enough.
That's very fair.
But if Trump is the nominee, if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, let's just stipulate there are going to be people in the Republican Party who are either going to vote for Gary, what's his name, or going to sit out the election. I'm sorry, I blanked on his last name.
Johnson.
Thank you,
but
Gary
that's okay.
Johnson. There are people in the Democratic Party who are either going to sit out the election or they're going to write in Bernie Sanders or they're going to vote for Jill Stein. For some reason, I did remember her name. The reality is, first of all, this happens in every election. There were Republicans who didn't go out for Mitt Romney. There were Democrats who didn't go out for Barack Obama. And
right.
there were
Rob
Democrats
Paul.
That didn't show up for John Kerry. It happens in every election. And frankly, I think in a Trump-Clinton election, it's pretty much a wash, which means that we're going to have an election where we don't have 65 million voting for one person and 63 million voting for the other person. Those numbers are going to come down a little bit this time. But basically, the electoral map is not going to change that much. Donald Trump is not going to take Ohio from Hillary Clinton. He is not going to take Pennsylvania from Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump has a huge mountain to climb to win a national election. And there are, you know, as popular as he seems to be in the Republican Party, which we know is a smaller party volume-wise, number of people who are registered Republicans is not as great as the number of people who are registered Democrats, and there are even more people in the middle. He has a certain portion, whether it's 40%, whether it's 50, 55% of the Republican Party now, who maybe are ready to vote for him. That still translates to about 30% of the country. And he's not going to be able to come up with that other 20.1% from the middle. They're just not going to vote for him.
I agree. In fact, I would actually add to what he says one disagreement. I don't think it'll be a wash. I think Trump will bleed far many more Republicans than Clinton will Democrats.
I think so, too. I was giving him the benefit of the doubt.
I'm in total agreement. I mean, here's the deal. Is Donald Trump is a scary proposition, and I think many, many people in the Republican Party recognize that. And I don't know if they would vote for Hillary, but I definitely think that they would protest vote.
That sounds about right.
Okay, so we'll have a couple of people come out with 7% this time instead of 2%. But with that, any other topics that we should cover before we wrap up this segment?
Election Day Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, exciting.
That's right. That's right. Michigan is the big one.
Yeah, that's going to that'll go to Hillary.
Any Michigan predictions on either side?
Ohio State is going to win.
Funny. I will say Hillary wins Michigan. I think Trump will win Michigan narrowly, but I think Cruz will beat Trump in Idaho and maybe one of the other states that are out there on Tuesday.
I can't see Bernie taking Michigan. If he does, it's a huge, no pun intended, it's a huge development. But at this point, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I agree. I think Hillary's going to win Michigan.
Yeah, I can't see her losing at this point.
And I think Cruz is going to get those the caucus states, like the Midwest caucus states. Mm-hmm. Seems to be doing well there.
Mississippi is on Tuesday also, and I think that will go towards Hillary also. And I think Trump's going to pull Mississippi also.
Yeah. Trump would be favored in Mississippi.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And that's got – well, Michigan's the big one with almost 60. It's 59 delegate votes. Mississippi has 40.
That's because it votes so heavily Republican in November.
Right. So. But that would be a good one for him to win also.
I'm gonna stick my neck out. I'm gonna say Cruz pulls the upset in Mississippi.
Cool.
You know, the interesting one on Tuesday, and I know we're wrapping up, is Hawaii, which no one ever goes out to because it's so far away.
Is it a caucus or a primary?
Hawaii is a caucus.
So Bernie's going to probably win that, and on the Republican side?
Actually, I don't know if it's if Democrats do it on that day, too. Let me double check on that.
If it's a Republican caucus, you'd have to think advantage Cruz, because caucuses really seem to be his strong suit. But we'll see.
Yeah. Hawaii's caucus isn't until March 26th.
You mean the Democrats?
For Democrats.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. For Democrats, it's just Mississippi and Michigan. It's a pretty slow day for them. But Michigan is huge for Democrats. It's 130 delegates. So, yeah, and Hillary's up in the polls by like 30 points.
Jonah, we're drifting. Okay. Wrap us up.
Wrap us up.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.